You're listening to Marketplace Weekend from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We now turn to more from our special series with the BBC, Six Routes to Riches, an in-depth look at the challenges and opportunities people face as they make a living around the world. We're taking a tour of six countries at the heart of the changing global economy. This week, we're in Brazil. We're at a samba school in a hangar in Sao Paulo, and you can hear the sound of musicians and dancers rehearsing for carnival. That's the country's annual party. We're here to find out what it takes to make it, to build a good life in Brazil today, but also to understand where Brazil, which has been South America's powerhouse in the past few years, fits into the global economy. The mood here is festive, carnival always is, but there's a sense of unease among people we've talked to. Credit is tight. The national oil company Petrobras is deep in a scandal that reaches into President Dilma Rousseff's political party, and growth has essentially fallen off a cliff. It's a long way from where Brazil was just 5 years ago. Back then, the country was growing at a rate of 7.5%. Brazil's natural resources, like iron ore, beef, and soy, were being sold around the world, fueling the boom in China, bringing massive profits home to Brazil, creating a new Brazilian consumer class, and also making some people simply staggering amounts of money. Guards with vests and guns are searching our car at a sunny gated compound about an hour outside Sao Paulo as our Brazilian producer Marina Wenzel translates.
What are they doing, Marina?
They are opening the car to check for security. They want to make sure that it's just the three of us and the driver, that there's no one coming in that could eventually rob or practice any kind of crime.
There are about 300 houses, mansions, really, inside these gates. And one of them belongs to João Carlos Cavalcanti, although he prefers to go by JC. Cavalcanti is 67, a geologist by training. He grew up middle class, but made his money in iron ore, finding a large deposit in Bahia State in the north of Brazil. He invited us to his villa for lunch and a tour, where he showed me a magazine featuring him and a private jet on the cover. There's a fireplace that's probably 7 feet long. This is just one of Cavalcanti and his wife Henilce's many homes, and a testament to how much money was made in mining. So this is an architect-designed doghouse, huh?
Yeah.
I have to ask you, how much did the doghouse cost?
Quanto custou ela que você quer te perguntar?
Essa casa?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. $4,000-$5,000.
Some $4,000-$5,000.
But for all that specificity, Cavalcanti refused to tell me just how rich he was. Forbes Brazil estimated his worth at just over $1 billion in 2013. How much money are you worth?
Não, eu não gostaria. Ou seja, eu não gosto. Não, não é bom.
Three things that people should never know about you. Number one.
Number one. Qual a sua religião que você professa?
What's your religion?
Okay. Number two.
Number two.
Quanto você tem no bolso?
How much do you have in your pocket?
Number three. Qual a sua opção sexual?
What's your sexual option?
Só essas coisas, só você sabe.
Only you should know about that.
The divide between rich and poor, though, was stark on our drive through the compound in his bulletproof car.
Para evitar a proliferação de favelas no entorno.
So, and the owners of the land here, they also bought all the land around it, like a belt to prevent from shanty towns from coming.
Wow.
So they owned the land within the compound and a safety belt right around it.
Just to make that clear, the elite in this compound purchased essentially a moat of land to make sure that nobody built slums or favelas too close to their estates. But our conversation didn't just reflect a physical separation from the lower classes, but a philosophical one, too.
So do you think that people who are poor deserve to be poor?
Eu acho, não sei, a Renilson não vai responder, que ela está com a afônica. Nada é o acaso.
So all these things, there is a why, there is a reason, there is a because. And why are these people living in the shanty towns in Brooklyn, in Africa, in the favelas, everywhere, in Mumbai here? Why is that? There must be a reason for these people to be there.
Cavalcanti's reasons why are rooted in what he says are a daily meditation practice and a belief in karma. But on the economic side, the commodities boom that made him rich also began to change the lives of regular people, not just the elite. We went to see Hector Gomez-Ang, who runs the Brazil program for the World Bank's International Finance Corporation. When was the moment that the middle class in Brazil started to rise? What happened?
You can trace it back somewhere in the 2000s, sort of over the last decade. This is something that has been happening. Combination of things. Brazil rode the commodity cycle, right? So this led to job creation. The story of the middle class in Brazil, in our view, is one, it's a story of job creation and access to credit.
Add to that the government's direct payments to the poorest of the poor in Brazil, known as the Bolsa Família. When you do that, about 50 million people, yes, 50, joined the middle class between 2003 and 2014. That's according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. In Brazil, socioeconomic classes are grouped by letters, A through E. It was first done by academics, and now just about everyone uses them. Class A includes both the well-off and the stratospherically rich, like Cavalcanti. B is mostly educated professionals. C, the middle class, maybe some with university degrees. Class D folks tend to work in the service sector. Class E earn minimum wage or are unemployed. And that middle class, Class C, is now the biggest group of people in the entire country. This discount department store, Casas Bahia, is all about selling to Class C. A washing machine, a living room set, a cooktop, pretty much anything you need to start a life. When we visited, there were a lot of shoppers crowded around the mobile phone counters. Casas Bahia also offers store credit, allowing customers to buy on installments. That's something that's been central to its business model for almost 50 years. Leandro Botelho is buying a computer on the store's installment plan with interest.
Yes, it's a credit application. It's the first time that I'm doing this. Really first time.
We spoke to Rafael Klein, Casas Bahia's former CEO and the grandson of the company's founder.
Why? Why make this the business model? Why is this so important to the company?
Because you got to have trust. I think at the end, everybody's good. We all can have our moments, but at the end, you truly have to give out credit and help them in a way that you believe. If you don't believe in a customer, don't give him credit. And if you don't trust him, don't give him anything. But it's important to give back to society what society was able to give to us.
Casas Bahia built their business on Brazilian middle-class consumers. Brazilian consumers are spending, but consumer confidence fell in January to its lowest level in 10 years. The economy just isn't growing. And like the shoppers at Casas Bahia, a lot of Brazilians have debt. The average family here spends about a fifth of its income just to pay it off. And in Brazil, there's no trip to bankruptcy court to get out of it. But the biggest economic storm cloud right now, even for regular people, it's actually the biggest company in Brazil, and the Southern Hemisphere for that matter, the oil giant Petrobras. Some 80,000 people work there. Thousands more at its contractors across Brazil. The government still controls part of Petrobras, and right now, the company is in the middle of a giant corruption scandal for executives allegedly funneling millions of dollars to friendly companies and politicians in President Dilma Rousseff's political party. Even on a regular weeknight in a middle-class family outside São Paulo, Petrobras and the potential fallout come up at dinner.
Do you think it will affect your lives?
Já, porque custo de vida tá aumentando.
Yes, it's already affecting us through the increase in the cost of living. Light is going up 26%. Water is scarce. There's going to be a rationing and also an increase. The government does not have the structure, and this is affecting us. And we pay the taxes, and we get no proper structure. That's why everything in Brazil is absurd.
That's Eleonora de Mello. She's 26 and works in a high-end mall in São Paulo. She invited us to have dinner with her mother, her brother Lucas, and sisters Daniela and Vanessa in the suburbs. When we asked them where they think they fall on the economic ladder, well, just listen to Eleonora tease her younger siblings Vanessa and Lucas.
Where do you guys say you would consider yourselves? You know, they have the rankings, the class A, class B, class C, class D, class E. Where are you? Mm-hmm.
Classe P.
Classe C.
Eu acho que é B.
Classe C.
Classe C pra baixo,
viu?
Classe C.
A, B, C.
Classe C.
Eu consideraria mais classe C, pessoas que, por exemplo, moram em barracos de...
She considers herself class B because her home is made of bricks and it has proper sewage and it's a proper construction.
And Eleanor is rolling her eyes at her.
Eu acho que é C, é assim...
She thinks it's C because of their situation, the difficulties that they go through, because they have to take the bus, they don't have the money to buy big things and pay at once, they have to undergo financing to buy a car, or they have to do the same if you want to have a house, and that the houses in this neighborhood, they are not like... It's not like a pattern of houses. They are not like the same. The way that the constructions are built is a little bit out of order. So she says that class B are those who live in proper neighborhoods with all the houses architecturally in order. This neighborhood, she thinks, is a bit of a mess. So because the houses are constructed one next to each other and they don't have exactly a pattern, an ordinated pattern among them.
I think we got our answer with everybody disagreeing.
What that conversation gets at, though, is just how fluid and tenuous success can feel in Brazil right now. With the economy slow and inflation picking up, even when you've worked so hard to build a good life. Eleonora's mother, Cleide de Mello, was kicked out of her family's house as a pregnant 17-year-old. She found work as a maid in São Paulo and cooked and catered food on the side for more money.
Ah, filha, eu trabalho para ajudar os filhos.
I work to help my children. I always work. Every month I have to give 500, 600 for Vanessa to help her pay the university, or I help pay the health plan for my children, for Lucas. Here it's me and God. I work and I work from Sunday to Sunday. And I don't have holidays. I sell out my holidays to make more money.
Her chicken fricassee and cheese souffle, by the way, are delicious. Cleide de Mello paid for this house, where she's preparing dinner, over the course of 10 years. It's narrow, with three main rooms and up a brick staircase from the street. A bathroom tap is exposed, and the bricks are uneven, but it's spotless and filled with family photos of three generations. And Cleide says paying off her debt, owning it free and clear, was second only to having her kids.
It was the greatest joy of my life because when I was pregnant, I lived in the street and I did everything I could to leave this home to my children as a way to reassure them that if, when I die, they will have something for them. So it was the greatest joy of my life.
Eleonora and her husband live upstairs. She works on salary and commission at an upscale teen clothing store in a São Paulo luxury mall. But on the weekends, she's taking classes to become a makeup artist. She says she's already seen the economy slow down. People just aren't buying what they used to.
O shopping que eu trabalho é o shopping mais antigo de São Paulo, o shopping mais reconhecido e o mais tradicional.
I work in the most renowned and most traditional mall in São Paulo. And the clients that we have are loyal clients, old clients, who have high standards, but now they are afraid to expand, to spend. They are not buying as before, and I am afraid too, because my money, my work, will represent my money, which through this money of my work, I'll be able to afford my future and hopefully my salon in the future.
Eleonora and her siblings joke that they feel like sardines when they cram themselves onto the bus or the subway. Her sister Vanessa, who's studying to be a dentist, is frustrated by the public health system. And everyone feels like the taxes they pay, which have just gone up as part of new austerity measures, aren't getting them enough. Even from the former finance minister, Rubens Recupero. He helped manage Brazil's hyperinflation in the 1990s and now teaches economics.
People now, they have come to a higher level. So the improvement was basically concentrated inside the home, where they have a better furniture, better home, better electric appliance, better pay. They can buy more food. All this is good. But when they need to go to school, school is a better quality. If they need to go to a hospital, a public hospital, the quality is not good.
Although he's not in President Rousseff's party, he does credit her and her predecessor with alleviating Brazil's worst inequality. Still, he fears the weak economy could start to pull some of the new middle class back down.
There is no doubt that the social gains in Brazil are impressive. The problem is, will they be able to keep that? And it's very doubtful.
No one in the current finance ministry or central bank would speak with us on tape. But Marcio França, the vice governor of São Paulo, acknowledged that public services and infrastructure in Brazil still have a long way to go, saying there's something his grandchildren will see.
Only 10 years, this is what it will take for us to do this last stage of improvements, which is providing the public services with the proper quality.
And that may be the place, if Brazil slips into recession, as many economists think it will, where middle-class families feel the pinch the hardest. There have been cuts to pensions and unemployment benefits already, new taxes on gas and loans, and there may even be long commutes for another job if Brazilian employers start letting people go. When we ate dinner with Eleonora and Cleide de Mello and their family, we were struck by their faith, both religious, you can hear them praying for me here, and also faith that despite the slowing economy, they can still make a better life for the next generation. For Cleide's grandson, João, it's a dichotomy we heard repeated almost every day in Brazil. Hope for the future, but worry that the near term would be a struggle. When Eleonora climbed on her motorcycle for the hour-long commute to her job at the mall, she told us every day was a combination of prayer, thanks, and fight. You can share your stories about how you're making it in this global economy on social media. Use the hashtag #SixRoots. Next week, we'll turn our attention to another country with an emerging middle class that's becoming a dominant player in the global economy, a trip to India. If you've missed any of our other stops, including Germany and Nigeria, you can catch up on our website at smarketplace.org and click on the Six Roots link.